On this, a very special episode of the Open Paddock Podcast, we will discuss IndyCar news, USF 2000 Winterfest is here, the Nürburgring, Formula One car launches and filling the last seats, and a little bit of testing, Rally Sweden and Solberg to Rallycross, and more Mazda swag. This on the very special episode number 174 of the Open Paddock Podcast for Tuesday, February 5th, 2013. That's right. It's Open Paddock Podcast number 174. It's Tuesday, February 5th, 2013. I am your host, Kevin Neely, and I am joined today by the one, the only, Mr. J. Douglas Patterson, Esquire, attorney at law.
No. I may be a lot of things, but no, don't call me an attorney.
Yeah, trust me,
does not offer any legal advice. Choosing an attorney is a serious decision and should not be based on the opinion of any podcast host.
And having made that joke and being an employee of a law firm myself, I should probably take this opportunity to say, if you have any legal questions, please contact your local bar counsel for appropriate representation.
Yes. <There. laughs> Bases covered.
Yes, I am not liable anymore.
Although, you know, it's funny, as a teacher, sometimes I think I need to be a lawyer.
You know what, man? I work with them all day, and it's funny. I have friends that ask me if I've ever considered becoming a lawyer, and the answer is typically, are you crazy?
Yep.
I don't even have designs on being a paralegal these days, much less a lawyer. Or as we like to call them, half-legals. Or, yeah, bad nerdy law joke. But yeah, we've got information for you on this podcast, which is hopefully why you're listening to it. And a race review. Holy crap. Yes, yeah, we do. Yeah. Hey, we are going to talk about the USF 2000 Winterfest tonight. Hey, got to love the Mazda Road to Indy stuff kicking off.
Yeah, everybody said, oh, I can't wait till Sebring. I can't wait till whatever. I'm like, man, open wheel season already done started. It starts in early February every year with the USF 2000 Winterfest.
Heck yes, sir.
Three races in Sebring, and then three more, if I remember right, down at Palm Beach International Raceway.
Mm-hmm. Peanut Butter International Raceway, as I like to call it, PBIR. But hey, it's also a little F1 news. We're going to talk about the Nürburgring, and we've had some pretty awesome car launches. Down goes the step nose, and we're filling the last seats of the lineup.
Good, good, good.
Yes.
So Rally where Sweet? Are we starting tonight?
We are going to start on IndyCar tonight.
You know, there's been some really weird things happening in IndyCar.
To say the least.
You know, and yeah, well, and you know, I want to start with something that isn't quite on the show notes, but something that that came up on Twitter a little bit earlier today, and that is the whole dragon leg thing. When Dragon Jay Penske had his little bro moment, you know, there, wondered how that was going to affect the true car and the empowering women, you know, push that they're, I wondered about that relationship. I thought that has to affect it negatively, and we're hearing that there's some pretty hard feelings between Dragon Racing and the Catherine Legg group. So I wonder if Jay Penske hasn't just gone and pissed it all away.
Oh, snap, son. That was a bad joke.
Oh, come on. That's good.
But you know,
it's... That's funny right there. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, I don't care who you are. It's funny. Woohoo! Yeah, it's very valid, too, because... And you know that you really got to think that was probably like one of those icing on the cake kind of moments, especially with the way Penske seemed to swing around the True Car money last year, and removing Catherine from that car for significant stretches.
Yes, yes.
And you can't. And you know the sad thing is Catherine Legg is a good driver.
She is a good driver. She showed that in Champ Car.
Yeah, well, she showed it at Fontana.
Yeah, she had a great race at Fontana.
Yeah, and how do you expect her to generate good finishes when she's only in the car? It's like every five races, it seems like.
Yeah,
and granted, yeah, Sebastian Bourdais is the chalk on that one. He is the guy that's going to get the better finishes, but the True Car money is tied to the female driving initiative. I mean, all you got to do is if you were in any IndyCar media tents last year, you got a little True Car badge when you were in there and it had pictures of all their drivers on it.
Yep.
They're all female, by the way. So,
well, except for Gustavo Menezes. Yeah. Although I think his relationship with True Car is his past. I kind of joked with him a little bit, there as that was starting. It's like, what's the joke? I'm surrounded by women. This is good.
Yeah. In fact, I believe he made the best contract in the paddock more than likely. But who wouldn't like that?
Yeah, no, I really dig what, True Car has been doing, you know, and really being involved, not just in one aspect of motorsports, but of course they're in sports car racing and with, Holbrook there in the Mazda Road to Indy, with McIntosh there in the IndyCar series, with Legg in the Rally America series with Veronica May, and there's another form of racing I thought they were in.
Actually, it was just announced too that Ashley Freeberg is moving to the Porsche GT3 series.
Okay.
So she's getting a...
Now, where was she originally?
Let's see. Ashley Freeberg was in Star Mazda.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And also, I'm looking at right here, they've got Emily Tominovich in the Playboy Mazda MX-5 Cup.
That's the other series I was really trying to remember. I knew they were involved in something other than just what we had mentioned.
And you've got Shay Holbrook. She's in the SCCA World Challenge.
Yeah, she's in what car are they running? I think she's in the TC class, and I'm trying to think what type of car they run.
It's a Honda Civic SI.
Yes, a little sedan looking, little compact sedan looking thing.
And also, you've got Verena May,
right,
doing Formula Drift.
Formula Drift. I thought she was in Rally America. Running the Fiesta R2.
Yes, she is. She also does Formula Drift, believe it or not.
Oh, there you go. Multitask.
Yeah.
Start. She was Formula Drift. She actually was really good at it. And then she switched to Rally. And she's actually just got an R1. So it's just a real basic Fiesta she's out there with.
Oh, I thought she had an R2.
Nope. It's not full R2 spec. It's just a little R1 self-built. Kind of thing.
Nice.
Yeah, so basically it just means the suspension is stock out there getting beat to hell and stuff like that. You know, transmission stock as well. I think it's, I don't think it's a sequential gearbox on it, so.
Okay. Well, I don't think the R2 is sequential either, is it?
Yes, it is. If you're full R2 spec, you get the sequential gearbox and special suspension. I think that's the two main differences between it.
I want one.
I know, I want one too.
Oh man, I want one.
The R2 package is about $30,000, which is considered affordable.
Well, it is affordable for a turnkey rally car.
True.
So, okay, I want an R2 for rallycross, and then I want the Focus STR for autocross.
Ah, yes, the Focus ST. Nice.
So someone wants to sponsor our podcast and hook me up with those two cars. That'd be great.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Shaw. Welcome to this very special episode of the Open Paddock Podcast.
Oh, yeah, he opened the shore in very dramatic fashion. It was pretty awesome.
We'll have to hear it later. So where'd you leave off?
Well, we're talking a little IndyCar right now. We were talking about Jay Penske and his streaming capabilities causing problems for him in the sponsorship arena.
his yellow stream is not the kind of streaming they're looking for.
Well, yellow does mean caution.
Nice.
Yeah. I'll just see if I can get maybe Shannon McIntosh to join us next week or something like that.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
To talk about that a little bit more. Let's see, other IndyCar news. We've got Andretti adding some engineering firepower and confirming a fourth car is definitely in the works for the 2013 season.
Yeah, I'm wondering who's going to be in there. You had mentioned earlier mm-hmm. a really good possibility of EJ Viso. And I was really excited about that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this. I've heard from other sources that keeps popping back up and that Andretti may be announcing that as soon as next week.
Well, you know he's got some money to bring, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because his buddy JC, you know, he's got some money.
Well, and, you know, I know that he gets a bad rap for being a crasher. Okay, when he was with HVM and maybe his first year with KV, it might have been a little well-earned. But in the last couple of seasons, he has done really, really well.
I thought last season...
Clean, and yeah, last season he was very strong. I really liked the way he raced.
He couldn't help it that the KV car was not any good.
Right.
The only problem I had with Viso and his crashing into other people, especially, was the fact that he'd always blame it on somebody else. In his not this last year, but the year before. He was a little cocky about it.
Well, okay, now, the year before, a lot of those crashes weren't his fault. And, you know, I understand what you're saying, but there were a lot of times when you'd see Viso off in the wall or somewhere else, and it was because of somebody else's screw up. There was one instance, it was a street race, I want to say it was Toronto, where Takuma just sideswiped him, just completely blindsided him, took him out, headed down to, I think it was turn three. I'd have to look back and see, but anyway, there was one street race where he just completely clocked by his own teammate. And so there were a number of incidents when he had a DNF that genuinely wasn't his fault. I know what you're saying, Mike, and I'll give you that point.
It's like, you know, a lot of the other drivers, you know, they typically will be like, you know what, it was a bad situation. You know, I put myself in the wrong spot or whatever. Maybe the guy couldn't see me. You know what I mean? Even if
maybe
it wasn't,
he's a wanker.
You know, they'd be a little more respectful about it, and he just jumped all over whoever, you know, in a very egotistical manner.
I'll tell you this, though. Viso is nowhere near the KV crash master that Mario Moraes was.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, wow.
Someone who's...
Mario Moraes and EJ... on the same.
You know what? Maybe it was Marias I was thinking of. Never mind.
Yeah, Marias.
I think it is. You know, Marias
is a
back. Sorry,
idiot.
EJ, if you're listening to this. You know,
Mario Marias brought new meaning to the term double parking, as in parking on top of other drivers.
Yes.
Just
that opening of Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
He just fully mounted for Marco. Oh wow! This is a family show. You can't
car humping.
It was like, it kind of reminded me of Indianapolis 1993. Nigel Mansell meets Dennis Vitolo. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I'm sure I saw it, but I can't remember it.
We see cars going around the track, and a camera cuts away, and next second later, somehow unknown to everyone, including Vitolo and Mansell, Vitolo is on top of Nigel Mansell.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, this Andretti Engineering thing looks like Hinch is getting his engineer back.
Cool. I'm very happy about that because I some people kind of I picked James Hinchcliffe in the Speed Geeks Fantasy Racing League, and I was.
That's not all you picked.
Yeah. How about that? That was pretty awesome, wasn't it? But anyway, so I picked Hinchcliffe. And mentioned that I was very excited. I was very up on Hinch this year, and a lot of people had been, oh no, Andretti isn't going to have any kind of engineering. That's a crap pick. Right now, I'd just like to say, suck it. My boy is going to rock this year. I think the mayor he's going to be right up there battling. This will be the year for some wins.
Yeah, he's getting reunited with Craig Hampson, who was his engineer at Newman Haas when he had that amazing rookie season in a very horribly underfunded car. Since then, Hampson's been working with Dragon Racing in a bit of a consultancy kind of role. So last year, his engineer was Tino Belli, and Tino has left to become the new technical director at Panther DRR. And another hit to the Andretti engineering department, obviously, is losing Alan McDonald, who went back to Sam Schmidt Motorsports. So that leaves Hampson in kind of a must-perform spot, but you know what? He's with Ray Gosselin, who really helped Ryan Hunter-Reay a lot last year, and so I have no doubt in my mind that they can't get it done.
Yeah, I'm very bullish on Hinchcliffe this year. I think this is going to be his breakout year.
You know, Hampson
very well, yeah.
And you gotta say something for Hampson. He really had a lot of commitment to Newman Haas because he stayed technically on contract with them through 2012. In hopes that they could get their program back together, which unfortunately for them never happened.
Right.
But yeah, good to see him moving on to Andretti, getting back with Hinchcliffe. You got to think that that's a partnership that's really going to pay off. So more IndyCar news. We've got Mike Conway. He's coming back to IndyCar in a one race deal for Long Beach, possibly extending, I've read, into 4 or 5 more events with Ray Hall Letterman.
You know, I understand Conway's reluctance to race on ovals. The thing is, so IndyCar is in part an oval series. It's always been part of what it means to be an IndyCar driver. And so, all right, you want to come here and kind of run around on the twisties. You're not going to be competitive because you're not around every week. I guess what I'm wondering is, what's the goal? I get to be in a race car? I mean, surely there'd be someplace else that you'd want to go to where you could compete a full season and contest a championship. Because he's not doing the 500.
Oh, heavens no.
You know, and, you know, I can understand someone being involved in a partial season deal where, okay, maybe it's going to lead to a full year next year, or you're going to do a partial season and the 500. You'd say, well, I'm not running all the races, but I get to race in the Indianapolis 500. I just have a hard time seeing what Conway's motivation is here, other than just, I want to drive an IndyCar at some twisties and have fun doing it. You know, if that's it, you know, it's okay, but, you know, it's kind of gentleman driver instead of proper professional driver type of attitude, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think Mike would be better served if he went to sports car racing, honestly.
I think so, too. I think so, too. I think he would be much better served competing in the WEC or even like Plowy did, and competing in the ALMS, even in P2.
At least
you're driving for a championship.
If it's a matter of him just wanting to stay in the United States, I'm sure there are plenty of Grand Am or ALMS teams that would be happy to take his family's money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, plenty of GT rides out there, right?
Yeah. I mean, he could even score a prototype ride, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because Conway's not a bad driver at all.
No, he's a very good driver. I was very disappointed to see him bow out at Fontana. I was very disappointed by that, because I've always thought he was he had potential and could have been a solid driver. Certainly not going to race for Foyt anymore, is he? Quitting on race weekend. You know, it's funny. There's a bit of a dichotomy here. I look at what happened with Conway at Fontana, and I see people go, oh, yeah, I understand that. You know, it sucks to happen on race weekend, but totally get where he's coming from. Versus when Sebastian Saavedra did the very same thing, you know, saying, no, this car is a piece of crap. It's unsafe. I'm not getting into it.
Yeah.
At Kentucky. And people just blackballed him. I mean,
yeah.
Roasted the poor kid. And, you know, I'm like, wait. There's something fishy here. You can't say okay to one and boo to the other, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know. I think there's something about Saavedra that rubs people the wrong way. And Mike,
envious of his hair.
It's got to be that.
He has... best hair ever.
But yeah, it just made no sense to me. Conway backs out because he doesn't feel safe. People commend him for it. All right, you know, here's another thing we got to consider about that whole situation too. We're talking pre-Vegas and post-Vegas here.
Yes, this is true. This is true. And there's a big attitude change post-Vegas, isn't there?
Yeah. People are a lot more willing now to deal with drivers. Let me rephrase that. People are a lot more willing right now to deal with drivers not feeling safe in a car.
Yeah.
Now, as further we get away from Vegas, that is going to change. People are going to start forgetting, and you're going to see more.
Well, that's human nature. That's what we do, right?
Exactly. So we'll see how that turns out. But we've got some more news coming out of the Ray Hall Letterman camp, and that is your breaking news for today. Last week, your breaking news was Dario and Ashley splitting up.
Yes, this week, People Magazine news. Thanks.
Look for Mike Shaw's new column in People Magazine. it's James Jakes signs with Ray Hall Letterman Racing. Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan, Rodham Clinton... Kennedy Onassis.
You know, I'm anxious to see how Jakes does. You know, I don't think he's the amongst the elite drivers in the series, but he's a darn good driver. And I think he was better than his car allowed him to demonstrate there in recent years. And so hooked up with Ray Hall Letterman. I think you should... I think you'll see some top tens from him on a much more regular basis.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. If you go back and you look at James Jake's history in other series, he's actually had some good finishes in GP2 and GP3.
Yeah.
He's better than his IndyCar experience has shown him to be. And now that he's in a car that is a little bit better than the coin, I really think he can be a top 10 driver.
I don't know that you're going to see him regularly in the top 10, but I think you'll see him there more often than not.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, he's not going to finish the season in the top 10, but he can at least jump up there and have one of those good finishes every once in a while. And who knows, maybe he can pull a Takuma Sato and contend for a win every once in a while.
I think that's right. I think that's right. Under the right conditions, I won't be seriously stunned to see him contesting for a podium position.
No, not at all.
I don't think it's going to happen more than once next season, but I think it could happen once.
He's got talent. It just hasn't had the proper outlet.
Yeah. So also, you know, a lot of people were prognosticating that maybe Briscoe was going to Ray Hall, and well, places are drying up. Is there any place left for Ray Hall? Or I'm sorry, Briscoe?
I don't know. Let's maybe see. They just think he's too gentlemanly and nice, and you know, unless you're between the cones, you know, I mean, just not hitting the throttle fast enough.
I think maybe he's not bringing enough cash.
Yeah, well, you know, probably the real deal.
We talked about trouble in the Jay Penske camp, and Briscoe has driven for Jay Penske before.
This is true.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, and it won't surprise me if the leg thing falls through and he goes there. So,
and I know HVM is looking for a driver.
Really?
Yeah. Sorry. Let's see. Who else would be looking for a driver? Well, there is that third.
Fisher might be interested in running a second program. Maybe.
You know, I think that would do Newgarden a lot of good, honestly.
Oh, I think it would, too. And not that he did poorly last year.
Yeah, Newgarden...
He did a lot better than people expected him to do last year.
Yeah, his rookie year, he did a great job.
And I really liked the way he handled himself.
Very professional. Yeah.
Well, and more than just that, always very reflective. You know, not thinking of, well, that stupid wanker over there ran me off the road, which at Long Beach, that's exactly what happened. But thinking... Instead, all right, what could, not just blindly putting blame on somebody else and dropping the issue, but thinking, what could I have done to have avoided being in that situation?
Like when he really overshot it at the beginning of in Brazil.
Yes. There, and of course, that was a performance mistake on his part. But at Long Beach, it wasn't a performance mistake. That was a positional mistake. That was a strategic mistake. And so, you know, I believe it was Dario that came in deep and pushed him wide. But, it, you know, he didn't come back and blame anything or you know anybody else. And being a poker player for a very long time, this is winning thinking.
You don't
blame somebody else. You think, well, why was I in that situation? How can I avoid being in that position again? And so I was very, very impressed with how Newgarden approached the sport. And approach a strategy of the sport.
You know, to me, the whole Newgarden Franchitti thing at Long Beach was nothing more than a rookie driver getting absolutely schooled by one of the best drivers to ever set foot in an IndyCar.
Well, okay, and I will give Dario the fact that he is extremely talented and good. There is no debating that. That doesn't mean it wasn't a bit of a jerky move and kind of on the side of dirty racing, if you ask me. It wasn't gentlemanly racing. It was pretty nasty, aggressive.
Stop right there. Back it up. You mean Ashley Judd has been wrong?
Yes.
Dario is not the gentleman driver?
No.
Holy
Ask
crap.
Ask Masato.
My world just came to an end, honestly.
And now I'm not talking about the Indian incident with Takuma Sato. I'm talking about the New Hampshire incident with Takuma Sato. But anyway, we're going to don't let me get up on a soapbox.
Time to get me started.
Yeah. I'll run all night with that. So, and I'll just end up pissing Andy off.
AeroKits 2014. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, didn't we say, hey, AeroKits in 2012? Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry, we were just kidding. Okay, new car coming in 2013, new AeroKits. Oh, wait, no, sorry, let's wait some more. And now we're like, 2014? Really?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to know what to believe, but, you know, from an advertiser's standpoint and from a fan's standpoint, I love the idea. And
okay,
if they keep adding more cars to the grid like this, like so-and-so looking for a driver, whatever, you know, I mean, these cars that are so expensive, right? They're going to add, they're adding extra cars in there into their teams, and they can't afford an AeroKit? Where does that complaint come into play?
Yeah, here's the deal. The reason for the delay is, I think, unanimously, throughout the paddock, the owners are saying, we don't want these. This is an additional cost to us. We don't want to pay for it. The car is good as it is. Let's just go. However, and I've mentioned this before on this show, that people pay very close attention to the expenditure side of the balance sheet, but pay very little attention to the to the revenue side.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think about the additional revenue that can be generated from having AeroKits. The manufacturers, Chevy and Honda, are very, very keen on having AeroKits as part of their whole marketing and promotion package. And you're denying them that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I just think about it. When you see, you know, say Marco and his RC Cola car looks so unique compared to the other cars out there or whatever. I mean, that, it stands out.
Right.
You know? And, I mean, that's worth money to have a car stand out instead of being just like the rest of them. Okay, yeah, different, paint scheme on them, but essentially just the same car.
Now, guys,
significantly looking different. I mean, look at the Delta Wing, you know? Everybody knows that car.
I really think we've got to tie in our last IndyCar story with this one.
I'm right with you.
Yeah, I think it all fits perfectly together. And that last IndyCar story being, there's a pretty substantiated rumor going around right now that Terry Angstad's going to be named the new IndyCar CEO.
And so we're running on Angstad time.
Yeah.
It all comes together now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It all makes sense.
How many years was Terry going to launch a new car?
Oh, jeez. It kept getting delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed, right? It's supposed to come out, I think, in 2008-ish,
mm-hmm.
and then bumped. And, I'm not keen on this. I hope it is mere rumor, but it sounds like it has legs.
Yeah.
Sounds like it has legs, and that has me nervous.
Now, hopefully this time around, we'll get an Angstad that doesn't feel run by Tony George.
Well, and maybe we have one that doesn't want to run to China.
Yeah.
Oh, ouch, yeah.
Because remember, he set up that deal and never took a check. He just took a piece of signed paper. It is worth just enough to go wipe your hind end with, and that was it.
And that is exactly what happened, because that deal went straight into the crapper.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it's like, what do you mean? You didn't? What do you mean you didn't get any earnest money? You know, let alone didn't get the sanctioning fee up front. You didn't even get any earnest money. And bam, they say, nope, we're disregarding this contract.
All right. Forever alone. So now we're on to Mazda Road to Indy, and Mr. J. Douglas, please tell me what happened with Winterfest.
Yes, on to much happier news. The racing open wheel racing season has begun.
Yay!
We have five race. No, it is six races. I'm sorry, I keep going back and forth. The six race Winterfest Championship, Cooper Tires Winterfest Championship, beg your pardon. The first three races, first race was today, two more take place tomorrow at Sebring International Raceway. And then next week, on the 9th and 10th, the series goes to Palm Beach International Raceway. Saturday, they'll have a practice qualifying one race. Sunday, they'll have a warm-up, and then race two and three. And so it's kind of like a little mini series, championship series, as a prelude to the primary racing season. This is a brilliant way, by the way, for teams to really evaluate talent. So you can bring in a driver and watch them run around a circuit, right? And you can see whether they're fast or not, but you can't see if they're racy or not. And this provides you with a genuine platform, a competition platform, with which you can evaluate, some talent. And so I really like this notion of a Winterfest. It'll be interesting to see if Anderson Promotions kind of pulls in Pro Mazda into, or has a separate Pro Mazda Winterfest Championship or something like that in the coming seasons. But anyway, so there at Sebring this morning, the first practice, Neil Aboriso set the fast lap, set the fast time, and set the bar at a 2:03.923, besting Scott Hargrove, and James Fletcher came in or set the third fastest time in practice. All three of them with Kate Motorsports, and so you know, no surprise, Kate Motorsports is kind of leading the way. Remember that Spencer Pigot and Matthew Brabhams, the two who battled for the championship and just dominated the field all season long last year, they were with Kate Motorsports with Wayne Taylor Racing as well. Stefan Rosinski with JD Motorsport, I love this kid's nickname, Razzle Dazzle, from Edmonton, Canada. He came in fourth in practice, a little less than a second, about three quarters of a second, off of Aboriso's top speed or top time. But then on to qualifying, we really didn't see anything much different, except that Brzezinski was good enough to qualify third, and right next to him was the national class championship contender last year, R.C. Enerson. He is now with Z Sports Midwest with Team E Racing, and he qualified in fourth Anderson is an exciting kid to watch. Watched him compete with Heinrich Perusev and with Mark Easton last year, and I tell you what, the kid is quick, and I'm really, really happy to see him in a championship car this year. It's going to be tough to keep up with the Cape Motorsports boys, though. So Neil Labaruso takes pole. Scott Hargrove starts alongside him. Teammates, again, reminiscent of Piggott and Brabham from last year. And the race, you know, I tell you what, I don't know what Cape Motorsports is doing to those cars, but they understand these Van Diemen chassis. They understand them extremely well. And Neil Labaruso led from pole, won the race, set fast lap, got the hat trick. Scott Hargrove followed him the whole way, although he kept getting further and further adrift. He ended up being 9.6 seconds back of Labaruso at the end. And, you know, this is the thing. This is the deal. Labaruso and Hargrove, as far ahead of Scott as Neil was, Scott was just hugely ahead by about 20 seconds, just a little bit under 20 seconds ahead of Danilo Estrella, Bilardi Auto Racing's new driver. In fact, just signed this past week. And he and Rudzinski had a good battle there mid-race, and it was weird on the timing and scoring. Danilo's name and his row went black. I thought there was a black flag. Apparently not. Stefan Rudzinski, late in the race, had made a driving error and had a near off and lost a couple of spots. Lost a spot to R.C. Anderson. And had slipped to fifth position. He would eventually get that position back from Anderson in the last, I think, second to the last lap, so the penultimate lap, lap 11 of 12, and took fourth. But no foul play involved. So what looked like maybe a black flag on timing and scoring, wasn't. Danilo, and this is provisional race report right now, appears that he will keep his podium finish, and Rudzinski in fourth, Anderson in fifth. Rounding up top 10 was Jake Edison of Afterburner Autosport, Jesse Lazare of Haps Racing Services, Peter Portante of Bilardi Auto Racing, and Jason Wolf of Pabst, and Matthew DeLeo, MDL Racing, a privateer. Good to see Matthew DeLeo back. I think there was some people wondering whether or not he would come back or not, but he's always exciting to see there in the car. Of note is Tim Cindric's son, Austin Cindric. He is racing with Andretti Autosport now. In the number 77 machine, so good to see Cindric's kid in the Mazda Road to Indy and doing reasonably well. By the way, for the races tomorrow, you can follow timing and scoring there on the USF 2000's website. Just go to usf2000.com. And you'll see a link on the left that says click here for live timing and scoring. Tomorrow, let me get you the race times. The warm-up is at 9:40 a.m. This is all Eastern, by the way. And race 2 is at 1:20. And race 3 is at 4:20. But anyway, sorry, sophomoric little humor there. But anyway, so be sure to check out the races tomorrow. Follow live timing and scoring, and join us on the chat there on Twitter, as several of us are following the race. And so that was it for the Winterfest action this afternoon.
Cool.
The there was some other news in the Maserati Indy. Diego Ferreira re-upped with Juncos Racing for the Pro Mazda series next season. Diego came to Juncos Racing as part of the Team Viso project. Viso seeking out and promoting young Venezuelan talent to bring to the Mazda Road Indy. Bruno Poli and Diego Ferreira were the two drivers he brought up last year. Diego was voted most improved driver in Star Mazda last year, and I do not disagree with that at all. He had a great season, especially there at the end. A little rough at the beginning, but really, really improved and shaped up and was very competitive there in the final few rounds. And so I'm excited to see what he's going to do here in 2013. I think he'll be a strong driver for Juncos. But thinking of other drivers, there really hasn't been a whole lot to talk about. In Indy Lights right now, we have 5 confirmed drivers. 5. Andretti Autosport has confirmed Carlos Munoz, who again did really, really well, especially towards the end of last year. Zach Beach, who moves up from Star Mazda, is with Andretti Autosport. I suspect that before racing season begins, we'll see Sage Karam confirmed in a third Andretti Autosport car. I really can't see Andretti after their long partnership with Karam. I really can't see them not elevating him up into Indy Lights, bringing him along. I think it'd be a mistake if they didn't. Of course, we know Peter Dempsey was confirmed last year with Ballardi Auto Racing. They had that deal sewn up pretty quick. Jack Hawksworth, of course, with Sam Schmidt Pearson Motors or Peterson Motorsports now. Rick Peterson, a new partner with Sam Schmidt. So anyway, Hawksworth is going to be their primary driver, their top driver. And I tell you what, that's going to be the car to beat. Hawksworth is going to be the car to beat in Indy Lights. Team Moore Racing, we have Juan Pablo Garcia. It'll be nice to see Garcia in proper equipment, see what he's capable of. Don't know about the rest. We know there's probably going to be a few more cars, but things look pretty sparse right now. I think we're still looking at low teens at best once the first race of the season hits. Pro Mazda is looking a little better, although still there's a lot of open seats. We have at Andretti Autosport Shelby Blackstock and Matthew Brabham. I think the Andretti Autosport stable is full. JDC Motorsport, I think their stable is full as well. In Pro Mazda with Zach Meyer, Juan Petrohedra, and Lloyd Reed. Lloyd Reed will be an interesting person to watch. I think this will be his debut. Well, not his debut. So I think he ran one race last year. It'll be interesting to see him in a JDC car. Cause the JDC cars are always very, very strong. We'll see how that goes. Juncos Racing, we have Scott Anderson confirmed, and as I just mentioned, Diego Ferreira. They've tested a couple others, but only 2 confirmed drivers right now. They might confirm a third later. Maybe they run 4, maybe not. I don't know. This is going to be a kind of a volatile year. M1 Racing has confirmed Juan Acosta, and Team Pelfrey with Spencer Pigot. That's it. They'll probably run one more car. I think they were pushing it last year to have run 2. USF 2000, there's a lot. We are under no We're under no worries with full grids in USF 2000. Like last year, they are just huge. So that's it for the Mazda Road Dandy.
Excellent. Lots of interesting news going on there these days. And speaking of interesting news, Mike Shaw, what is happening in the world of rally?
Well, rally, we're getting ready for Sweden coming up. That starts this week. Everybody's kind of concerned a little bit. So the second round for the WRC Championship, and everybody's a little bit concerned about not a lot of snow there, but it is coming down as we speak, and so it looks like they're going to get a pretty good base. It's on top of gravel when the snow comes down instead of, you know, like when we were over at when you're down in Monte Carlo, that's, you know, snow and ice on top of asphalt, so very different environment. Exciting news for there is, you know, you're going to be expecting the guys from up in the Scandinavians to do the best out there. They're used to the snow and the ice. So Mads Osberg, he's always done pretty well, finished on the podium the last 2 years in a row. So I'd expect him to maybe go for the win this time now that he's got the full sponsorship power behind him with Nasser Al-Attiyah's M Sport Qatar, whatever long name, World Rally Team. And then, you know, obviously you got to look out for Jari-Matti Latvala. He won it last year. He's won it a couple of times now, and he's just really fast if he can keep it on the road. But he's got a lot of confidence there. He knows the stage as well, and I expect him to do really good. Other interesting news is Nasser was supposed to be back and was going to be racing, but apparently he's got a bug or something like that, not feeling well, so he's offering the keys to Justin Wilson, Malcolm Wilson's son. He didn't race at all last season, didn't get any sponsorship dollars to help back him up. But the year before, he was out racing, and he did okay. He kind of hung around kind of the back half of the pack, but, you know, he finished. You know, he was a guy that was really kind of focusing on finishing and bringing the speed up over time. So it'll be nice to see what he does when he's there. And then to add a little more fun to it, we're going to have Bolt Solberg's there. But unfortunately, Petter won't be in a WRC car. He'll be racing in a historic class with the Ford Escort Mark II, which is the classic rally car. It is, you know, it's rear-wheel drive, so it really steps out and gets a good lot of drifting going on, and yet it handles really well. So that'd be a fun car to watch out on the stages. And then his brother Henning, Henning's going to be out there. He's got a sponsorship at least for this one round to be able to be out there racing as well. So, but he'll be out there in a full WRC spec car. So that'll be fun to watch. The other thing to look out for with Sweden is whether or not the timing works. This is the big question mark. There are such terrible timing issues that happened with this new company where the FIA decided to dump Stage 1 Technologies and went with this STI company based out of, or SIT, whatever it is, out of Spain. And they just could not keep the time straight, and it was frustrating everybody. We talked about it before in a previous episode, and it's even a safety concern. So you got nice big open spaces here in Sweden with, you know, no big mountains or anything like that. It's pretty flat out there, just cold. And you'd expect it to work if their systems work. And the FIA guys said that we're going to be watching these guys like a hawk, and if we get anything less than 100% perfection, you know, they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and see what other solution they can come up with. Because,
let me ask you a question. What was the motivation, again, for moving away from Stage 1? I mean, they have done such a great job in the past. Why was the decision made to break something that genuinely wasn't broken?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, the only thing I can think of is dollars, you know. With Stage 1, they developed the product along with the WRC. So there's a lot of cost in developing something from the beginning and bringing it up right, to modern standards and whatnot, mm-hmm. when you can have, and you know, then you don't just, now you can buy a lot of off-the-shelf stuff for a lot cheaper, probably, instead of maybe making stuff that you've been using all along, keep adapting it as technologies change. So maybe that's a little bit of it. These guys had off-the-shelf stuff that they thought was going to be just as good. You know, what's sad is even in this modern world of GPS guidance and all that stuff, we can't even see, like, an active map of the, you know, cars going through the stages. It's pretty ridiculous. You still see just these split times come up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the main bottom line, though, is I think money. They put it up to a bid when it came up back in September when they had the big FIA meeting out of Paris, and the different companies had to bid for it. And, you know, stage one, their main thing is, you know, they're about quality. It's not about the price. You know, you pay for the quality. Yeah, right. It's going to cost more.
The classic, you get what you pay for.
Exactly. You get what you pay for. And in Monte Carlo, it seems like they got what they paid for. We'll see what happens. But, yeah.
You know, you make a good point that, you know, think of when we're watching IndyCar and the timing and score there, we get the little dot of precisely where the car is on track, right?
Yep.
They got a little transponder. Okay, maybe we can't get quite that precise, but every car should have a GPS unit sender so that we can see where each of these cars are on stage. And, well, in fact, I know they have this.
I was going to say,
they had this in the past because I remember watching the highlight shows where they had the little ghost cars running side by side, right?
The ghost car thing I think you're talking about where they did, like, a panning camera to see, you know, who made it through this little section of the stage faster.
Yeah, yeah.
That was actually Eurosport.
Right, that right. That was back in the day.
But that was actually not with the WRC. That was the IRC.
Oh, no. See, I remember this with the WRC, and, you know, showing, you know, exactly as you say, and this wasn't recent, of course, this was a few years ago, but, you know, showing through a particular section, you know, how Loeb went so much faster than, say, somebody else.
Well, and along with that, we do know that they do have the active tracking, because...
Yeah.
When you're hearing it on World Rally Radio with Bex Williams, she's sitting there looking at a monitor with those moving dots.
Right.
She can see everything, and she's like, oh, somebody, you can see so-and-so stopped on the stage. You know, she can actually see it active, a moving map. Why don't they make that open to everybody to see?
Oh, it'd be brilliant. I'd love it. Right there,
you know,
on your
phone? So I don't know where the resistance is to that, because they've actually had that for many years.
I'd pay $10 for that app.
Yeah, exactly. I would pay to see that, definitely. I would pay for that. And I think they need to kind of get with it in the fact that, okay, yes, I understand. Maybe there's a slight concern that if it goes black and then, like, the little flag comes up that there's an emergency or something like that, but they can filter some of that stuff, just add some logic to how you make it happen. So, I don't know. Because, you know, you wouldn't want to publicize an emergency before they have enough information to put out to the public, right? But that's the only concern I can think of. Other than that, make it so we can all see it. Because when you're trying to compete versus, you know, where you can see another sport's live action stuff going on, you need that in rally.
Yeah.
So that'll be the big things to watch for with Sweden. I'm pretty excited about it because it's one of the fastest rallies, believe it or not, even though it's on snow and ice. These guys got the right kind of snow tires this time. They're a narrower tire with 360 tungsten studs in each tire.
They got saw blades.
Basically, yeah. They're tungsten tip studs that they actually get better traction. They better traction than a gravel tire on gravel. It's more like, almost like driving asphalt with the amount of grip they get. And it's one of the fastest rallies because they got the big open section. Like I said, not a lot of big mountains there in Sweden. It's just kind of almost like open plains kind of stuff with kind of rolling hills and stuff. So, very, very fast. And of course, there's the infamous Collins Crest jump that they have to hit there on the, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of the stage, but it is a classic one to watch. So, and like I said last week, they're putting the videos online now. They have Monte Carlo up there. I expect after Sweden's done, we'll see this happen again, where they put the coverage on the internet, because we know that Speed doesn't have it yet, so whether that contract's not been signed yet or what. So if you want to see coverage of that and some of the great jumps that'll happen off of Collins Crest, look for it on WRC.com. Moving on, speaking of the Solbergs, I'm going to talk about Petter Solberg here. He's got some interesting plans, finally, for 2013. Everybody was wondering what he's going to do. He's had a lot of offers for different types of motorsports. He decided he's going to put his attention into rallycross. And specifically, he said he wants to, at a minimum, do all of the events that are part of the X Games. So we'll see Hollywood in L.A.
What a perfect place for Petter.
Oh, he's the Ken Block of, you know, of Scandinavia.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard of, like, the motorsport show, the Solberg Motorsport Show they do in Norway. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Every year, except for this last year, him and his brother and stuff, I don't know how, he must have a lot of sponsorship dollars, but they'd actually have this giant soccer stadium converted into, you know, this big asphalt track with an over-under, head-to-head competition kind of thing. And they'd bring out everything from guys doing motorcycle jump crazy stuff to all the rally drivers. You'd have a bunch of rally drivers come out there and just go cooking off their tires. And they'd sell out the stadium in just watching them go out and do all this motorsport stuff.
Nice.
And they'd do it every winter. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So this year, instead of killing Marcus Grönholm, we're going to try to kill Petter Solberg.
You know, I've vented about the jump thing, and I hope there's changes there. We'll see what happens. You know, yeah, they got their camera shots with the car jumping over and the car going under, but I think it just needs to be a bridge. I think that's fine. Anyway, yeah, I'm excited for Petter, though. I think it's a really good thing for him to do. He's going to be doing he's back with Citroën for that. It's a specially designed DS3 that I think is the same guys that are doing the Fords. That guy has a shop out in Sweden that does all the custom builds. He did the Dodge Dart for
Travis?
For Travis Pastrana, right. And he did all the Fords. And so he knows what he's doing to make a proper rallycross car. Petter hasn't confirmed whether he's going to do full global rallycross championship, just the X Games so far. He's still hemming and hawing whether doing GRC or doing European rallycross. So, but for certain, he is going to be doing the X Games. So that's pretty exciting news. And let me tell you, if he comes to other places in the U.S., maybe something a little closer to me, I would definitely go see Petter. That would be awesome.
Well, you're on the West Coast, aren't you? Isn't that close to you?
Well, L.A. would be about, 12-hour drive.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's like saying that, I'm close to Barber, right? Yeah.
It's on the West Coast. You know, I'm at the northern tip, and that's at the southern tip, but hey, you know.
Hey, you're all on the, all y'all are over there on the same side.
It's hey, Kevin, nice. You live close to Coda? It's in Texas? It's just a 14-hour drive, that's
yeah,
all.
Yeah, it's in West Texas, right?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It's not like it was in East Texas or something.
See, the thing is, I'd rather go to a GRC event than I would an X Games thing, because it's just the craziness that is X Games. I wouldn't want to be there for that, because I think it would be just too distracting. I want to watch the racing and not a bunch of teenager hoopla.
Oh, see, I would love to, Deb and I would love to go to the X Games. She would love watching all the skate, and I would love watching all the BMX. That would be very, very cool to me.
I used to be into that when I was a teenager, but I think I just got my fill, you know?
Yeah.
A little older now. Anyway, so that's awesome. Petter Solberg, he's the man. And too bad he's not in WRC, but if there's anybody that can help promote Rallycross, you know, with him, Ken Block, Travis Pastrana, you know, that's just golden right there. So I was going to just mention a couple other quick things that happened in Rally in the last week. Our friend Antoine Lestage, he was up at that the first round of the Canadian Rally Championship. They call it the Pierce Neige Rally up there. That's, again, a studless snow event. And their engine broke on this third stage, so they didn't do so well. Crazy Leo, who's also from the Rally America Championship Series, he was competing with Pat Richard, which is Natalie Richard's brother, the co-driver for Antoine Lestage. Her older brother, Pat, was pretty much leading the way but trading places with Leo until Leo went off on the last stage in the night and hit a rock, made the suspension just go right up through the hood of the car. Whoops.
What do you mean Crazy Leo went off? Surely you jest.
You know what? He's been doing so much better. And I think what it was is, and even Heath kind of said himself, you know, his goal is to stay on the road. But when you see yourself almost at the same pace as the other guy and you're actually trading first, it's hard to tone it down.
Yeah. I mean, he's a racer.
How do you go at 9/10, you know? And actually, when people try and back off, a lot of racers, they end up doing worse, not better.
Well, that's what happened to Senna.
Yeah.
Right? At, where was it? At, I want to say it was at Monaco. When, he was, racing hard and he backed off and made a mistake.
Yep. It's, you know, cause when you're driving hard, you just kind of get in that zone.
Yeah.
When you start thinking about being conservative, you're thinking about that and not driving, you know?
It takes you out of your rhythm.
It does.
And you're more prone to error.
So, congratulations to Pat Richard. He won it for the Subaru Factory team up there. That's a good start for him. We'll have to see how the rest of the season goes up there. Also, this last week was the European Rally Championship, their second event. This one was, again, on snow and ice, this time in Latvia. And it's like, again, just kind of big open plains kind of stuff. So not a lot of references because they did some of the racing at night, so you don't have, like, trees or anything to see. You just got these open fields, and everybody was just going crazy. There's one guy in a Evo X that he said he saw 220 kilometers an hour on his speedometer at one point. At night.
Nice.
It was pretty fun to kind of listen to what was going on there. I don't know if you guys remember who Craig Breen is. He's the one that his co-driver tragically died, when they wrecked in Italy last year. Yeah. And, he ended up winning the SWRC, last year. And with that, he actually got, this is his first paid for 100, he's got a factory ride with Peugeot. In the Peugeot 208, or 207, sorry, Peugeot 207. And he's just amazed at the end of every stage. It's really cool to hear him. It's like, I can't believe I'm getting paid to do this now, and I'm doing this well, and this is every kid's dream, you know? So it was really cool. It was really humbling. He ended up finishing second, which was really cool. And then there's a WRC guy that, if you ever heard of him from years back, his name's Francois Delacour. He's a French guy. And you've heard of him?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So Francois, he dates back to the 80s even in racing. And he was kind of usually a tarmac specialist and then kind of, you know, ended up racing all the different events, including gravel. He was trading places back and forth with this Latvian guy. And it was just so exciting. The problem with Delacour's car was he ended up just using a car that was set up from the previous event, didn't get a chance to do any testing ahead of time, and so it had a shorter gearbox. The gearing was too short.
Mm-hmm.
So he was sitting there on the rev limiter almost the whole stage, just wanting it to go faster.
Yeah, just ran out of gear.
And so the other guy that was in the big, in the big Evo, so he's in a Peugeot 207, one of those little, you know, Super 2000 cars.
Yeah.
And then you have the guy in the big Evo X that was actually beating him, and then when it came down to the second-to-last stage, and Delacour felt so bad because he goes blazing by and the other guy went off and had something break on his car. And he felt bad because they were both trading places back and forth, and to see somebody just end up going off and not really coming down to the time at the end. So, anyways, so Delacour gets third. That was kind of cool. Again, just to watch the closeness. I swear, the close racing in rally right now has been better than most of the stuff I've been seeing on circuit racing. And then for all you other racing fans out there, Top Gear started its new season. I don't know if you guys are big watchers of that.
I saw that today. It was on my DVR, and I saw them do that. You're talking about the Bentley.
Yes,
that they did at the Rally GB.
Yep.
And yeah. I tell you what, it was funny, absolutely hilarious listening to Chris Meek shout at James May.
It was hilarious. It's like, if you can't do the notes right, shut up.
Yep. James just sitting here looking at the road going, I'm going to shite myself.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, it's like he kept saying, give me the next note. Give me the next note. And like he's like, he reads something and he just keeps looking out the window.
Yeah. He's like, come on. You know, I understand exactly that frustration. You know, because I was watching that little clip there on the season opener for Top Gear, and I thought back to last November when I was competing in my first road rally with my buddy Phil, and the first couple of stages on both days, first day I was driving, second day he was driving, and on both of those days, we spent most of those first two stages working out our communication. And you know, when I got my hands on the course notes and calling turn directions and course speeds and all that, I noticed I would get wrapped up in the calculation and looking at the road and not thinking about, oh crap, he needs instructions on where to go next. And he would be like, come on, I need it, give it to me now.
and
I saw that clip, and I'm like, I've been there.
Yeah, know? And what's even harder is at those speeds, I mean, you've got to be calling out the notes three corners in advance,
oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're reading not what you're going up to right now, you're reading what you haven't even seen yet.
Right, and so the drivers keep in a rotation, a three instruction rotation in their head all the time.
Yep.
And I loved what Meek had said about calling the pace notes when James had asked, well, when should I be calling, you know, how do I know what's coming up? And he said,
yep.
You feel it through your backside.
Yep. That's exactly right. He said, yeah.
Feel the turns.
Road drivers don't look up much, you know, They rarely look up. They're just feeling the different turns through their backside. Yep.
Yeah, that was a really nice spot. I liked it.
So for all you guys out there that watch Top Gear, pay attention, especially when they look at the pace notes before they start the stage, and you'll get a little understanding of how rally works. It's pretty interesting, and it's amazing that car, no gravel tires. It was just using all-season radials.
Yeah, he just had road tires.
What's that?
Yeah, he was just on road tires. That was the other thing that was just super impressive.
Yep, and that Bentley, oh man, can you imagine the sound of a V12 out there? We need that sound out there.
Well,
the
I'm
rally
just thinking,
stages.
How
That's
the heck did he
awesome.
Get that thing slowed down for some of those hairpins?
Well, it's not like you can take them fast in those tires. So there's your limiter
well,
right there.
Well, depends on how long that straight is leading into it, you know?
That's true. And the damn thing doesn't have an e-brake because the stupid electronic brake stuff.
Yeah, it's like, I know better than you. No, you don't! Give him a damn e-brake!
Yeah. Darn computerized stuff these days. Anyways, yeah, like I said, awesome to watch. And so, if you haven't seen it, if you don't have it on your DVR, go look. They usually repeat the episodes. Go to BBC America's website, or BBC America's channel and look up when it's going to play next, because it was an awesome, the best first episode ever for Top Gear. It was great.
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
And then one last thing on the rally subject thing is a couple weeks ago, there was a special that actually BBC did called Racing Legends, and it was about Colin McRae and his whole backstory, how many people loved and followed him. If you don't know who Colin McRae was, he's one of the people that helped popularize rally racing for the next generation. You know, this is before the year of Loeb, of Sebastian Loeb, but Colin McRae was just...
He's a contemporary of Grunholm.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, he was the never-give-up guy. He was the guy that... I mean, he once in Finland rolled the car three different times and was still driving. You know?
Well, and he rolled his car at the finish line at X Games.
Exactly. And that was the first time that X Games did a rally event.
Yeah.
Colin McRae helped organize that in working with Ken Block and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what got Pastrana and Block into the sport of rally.
That's exactly right. He is. I mean, he's and helped really start bringing it back, you know, even here in the United States, because mm-hmm. without the popularity, you don't get the advertising dollars, and you get names like that doing it, you know. We have a lot to thank for this guy, for what this guy did. He unfortunately died tragically in a helicopter accident in 2007. He was a pilot, and unfortunately was flying in poor conditions, and ended up going down, and both him and his son, and I believe it was a family friend, ended up passing away in that accident. But anyways, what I wanted to say about that was there's a special that they did, and it's available to watch on YouTube. So if you just look up Racing Legends Colin McRae, and I'll find it and post it on the site. I don't know how long it'll be there before BBC tries to maybe block it. But so far, from what I've seen, this is actually, I think, the second posting I've seen of it, and neither have been blocked yet. And so people recording it and putting it up. And like I said, it is just a great episode to see. You see Colin McRae's dad a lot in it as helping train this guy that's actually a cycling rider that's been in the Olympics and all that stuff, who's really actually into racing as well. And he's the one that ends up learning through the footsteps of how Colin would have learned when he was a kid how to drive. And like I said, and it just has all the backstory. Great stuff. Colin McRae, he is a legend.
Yep, absolutely. So anything else on the rally end, sir?
I think that's about it. Can't wait to see Sweden get started later this week.
Well, Mr. Neely, that leaves one thing.
Yes, sir, it does. We're going to wrap the show up by touching on some Formula One topics real quick. First at the boat, we've got Nürburgring agreeing to host the 2013 German Grand Prix, but the promoters are still suing the circuit boss.
Well, yeah, what's that about? Well, obviously it's about money, right? What's the when the agreement was made, was the share split altered, or what's still the beef?
The beef seems to honestly revolve around who owns the right to be called the German Grand Prix. And the it's crap. Sorry. Lost my train of thought there. Well, there's been a lot of debt issues at the Nürburgring and at Hockenheimring, honestly. And the deal is that there was supposed to be a 30% share of the profits from the Formula One race going to the lawsuit. And Nürburgring has acquired a lot of debt because they've built the shopping mall, an amusement park, a hotel, and various other things. And
now they've overextended themselves, in other words.
Yeah, so basically Nürburgring is looking for cash wherever they can get it. So they're trying to drum up cash, and lawsuits going back and forth. There's been a long-standing rivalry between the Hockenheimring and the Nürburgring, And honestly, all that's doing is making things even worse.
Wow, you're splitting precious resources between two different venues. As opposed to
there's been years
building
where
up equity in one venue and one event.
Yeah, you know, there's been years where one of the tracks hosted the German Grand Prix and the other one hosted the European Grand Prix. And
right. Well, now we have the European Grand Prix over in Valencia crap.
Yeah, and it's just been one thing after another, and the whole situation is just stupid, and it's going to have to eventually come to a head, because if it doesn't, it's going to wind up in the death of both the Nürburgring and the Hockenheimring, and no one will host the German Grand Prix because no tracks will exist to host it.
Now, maybe they have the German Grand Prix in Austria at Red Bull's circuit.
Yeah, the old A1 ring Red Bull ring or whatever in the world it is they call it now. But yeah, that's the scuttlebutt behind that. We've also had a bunch of car launches lately. We talked about the Lotus car launch last week. We had McLaren, Ferrari, and Force India, Sauber, Red Bull, Mercedes, and Toro Rosso come up lately. So,
and the Marussia came out today, and they have their car there on the F1 launch gallery. The thing that stands out to me looking at all these, you know, we looked at God, I hate calling it the Lotus. I really do. But we look at the Lotus.
can we call it the Gina?
Yeah, let's do that. I mean, that's really where the money is. So the Genai Capital car, it's got the step nose that we're familiar with from last year.
Yeah.
Right. Not many of the other cars do.
The only one that I really noticed that still had more of a semblance to last year's step nose was the Ferrari, and it was like right down on kind of the end of the nose this time.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the Ferrari, and I'm not seeing where you're seeing the step.
Okay, there's maybe. You're right.
I mean, it, you know, the Ferrari nose looks very blunt, which, God, I hate saying this. I like the looks of the Ferrari. I really do. Shut up, Sean. Shut up.
I think what it was is the picture that I saw was from a different angle.
Okay.
And it looked like there was a bit of a step down about where the Pirelli sticker is on the nose. At least from that angle. You know, doesn't look.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. It's real, real subtle.
Yeah.
But it's certainly not the Lego looking thing that we had from last year. That's for certain. The only two that have the pronounced three that I could see that had the pronounced step is the Lotus, the Red Bull, which surprises me. The Red Bull car has a definite step to it, and the let me click on it just to make sure I'm remembering right. Yes, the Caterham has a big step, you know, just like last year. But you look at all the others, including the Marussia car. The Marussia car looks really sleek. It really does. I don't know if that means it'll be fast, but it looks good. The McLaren and the and kind of the Sauber and definitely the Force India, they don't have a step more than they have a sudden change in pitch. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not this, where there's a shelf, but there's a definite bend, an immediate bend in the angle of the top line of the bodywork of the nose. the Mercedes, I think, looks the most interesting. I don't say that it looks the fastest or sleekest, but their design looks the most intriguing in what they've done and how they've sculpted the sides of the nose, how the nose rounds off to the sides.
It kind of looks like a
looks
platypus,
like a platypus beak.
It, yeah. Well, it does. Yeah. They all kind of do. But yeah, the Mercedes more so. In the right light, it can almost look like a step. You know, the end of it, where the Mercedes badge is very wide and roundish, you know, which gives it the platypus type of look, right?
Yeah.
But then how they sculpted the sides of that nose cone to be more rounded, less square and angular like some of the others. I would love to see the flow pattern around that nose. I would love to see the data on the aero simulation or
the computational fluid dynamics image. Yes.
I would love to see that or the measurements from the wind tunnel.
You know, it's almost looking like Ross Braun just went back to the drawing board completely and designed an all-new car instead of using a previous design.
Well, he needed to, right?
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that I find very interesting, you know, for the longest time, the Red Bull and the Toro Rosso look identical, right? They're near twins.
Yeah.
And even last year, they were really, really similar. This year, they are nothing alike. The only thing they have in common is they're sponsored by Red Bull. But there is no sign of a step at all. Excuse me. No sign of a step at all in Toro Rosso nose. It is much more. It is much sharper at the end than a lot of the others. You know, like I say with the Ferrari, you look at the Ferrari and it's a very blunt nose. And so is the Force India. If you look at the Force India, you know, it's got a really thick nose cone. You know, some of these are just razor thin looking things. But the Force India and the Ferrari are much thicker. But then, you know, you look at the nose of a shark, and it's not razor thin, right?
Right.
And so, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how some of these aero designs pan out. Of course, we expect the Force India to be very strong in the straights, as per usual. And with their nose design, I wouldn't doubt that at all.
Yeah, straight up just looks like a lot of teams have gone back to the drawing board when it comes to designing the 2013 car, because it looks like everybody's running the higher nose setup that traditionally, like the McLarens would run.
Well,
this year
the nose can't be any higher than it was last year, right?
Right, but they're
more of a smooth transition.
Like, yeah, they're putting the actual nose of the car higher up than they previously did.
Okay.
So.
But yeah, it's. I'll just say the cars look a lot nicer than they did last year.
I would agree with that.
It doesn't look like a bunch of cars with broken noses.
What's going to be really interesting to me is at the end of the season, if that new nose, that pretty radical configuration like Ross Braun has set up for the Mercedes, if it really is successful, how many cars are going to look like that by the end of the season?
Yeah, watching the development over time. Although, you know, the aerodynamics of the nose, it's much easier to change aero bits at the end of the car.
I was just going to say, the nose is going to be a minimal part.
Well, no. Quite the opposite. the nose is going to be a very critical part, as opposed to changing something at the aft end of the car. Because if you make a change at the nose of the car, that has aerodynamic impact all along the cord of the car, all the way back.
Yeah, it's not like putting a...
You've got to make a bunch of changes back behind as well.
It's not like putting a double diffuser on the wing or something like that.
Right. You know, so I don't expect that we will see a whole lot of... I don't think we'll see whole-scale changes to the nose design. Now, you may have a bunch of people looking at that and thinking about the 2014 car.
Yeah.
But I don't think you're going to see massive whole-scale changes to the nose. Unless there is a, unless Mercedes just starts walking away with races. You know, then we're going to see people thinking about just full redesigns of the aero.
Right.
But, you know, if you're changing the nose of the car, that's really what you're thinking about. You're thinking about whole scale aero design, you know, because if you make a change at the nose, it's going to be propagated all the way through the length of the car.
Well, I guess that's what I was trying to say is, you know, I guess I meant to say that, you know, the nose, it's not, I guess the biggest factor is making sure that you get smooth, consistent airflow still channeled back so the rest of your aero does, you know, the rest of the package does its job, right?
Well, and it's got to, you know, how the air flows over the front wing, how that air is deflected under the nose through the under tray, and how that gets directed into the radiators.
Those noses are pretty narrow. I don't know. I'm wondering how much the nose really factors into
what you see as the
point
of the nose. There's a lot happening underneath.
Yes, there is. Yeah, there's a ton going on underneath.
How that air hits that front nose is going to affect how it hits that under tray, and that's going to affect how that is diverted to the side out to everything else. I would still argue that the nose is a critical piece to the aero.
Speaking of critical pieces to the aero, looks like Luis Razia is going to take the second seat at Marussia, being critical to that car's operation.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. You know, I don't know. Yeah, he's a good driver, but man, that's not going to help Marussia get up above, where they were before. It's not going to help them score points.
I think it brings up more or less the question, are we past the days when you could can a driver mid-season?
Nope.
We may see it happening.
Nope, not at all. And we'll never be past that in Formula One. Can a driver any time if they suck extremely bad, unless they're just bringing gobs of money that's keeping you
afloat. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's the money that can talk sometimes, so.
Senna.
Of course, yeah. I guess at Marussia you're relatively safe for a season because the car's going to suck anyway. Car's going to suck anyway. As long as you're bringing cash, that's all they care about. The way I guess you get canned at a place like Marussia is if you start sucking really bad and the cash runs out.
Well, you start tearing up race machines.
How
you get booted from Marussia. But yeah, so long as you're bringing the race car home, I think you're safe.
Little about Razia, though. He's Brazilian. He was a Lotus test driver last year, running the feeder series since 2005. In 2012, he was second in GP2, so... I mean, the kid's actually got a little talent, but, he's not really on anybody's radar,
no,
so to speak. The other thing is confirmed. It's Giedo Vandergaard. He's at Caterham. He's the number two driver. He's Dutch. He was Caterham's test driver last year. He's been in the feeder since 2003. Finished first in the 2008 World Series by Renault, fifth in GP2 in 2011, and he also finished third in GP2 Asia in 2011. So, I mean, there's really not a whole lot you can say there either, except he's a driver and he's Dutch.
There you go. And he fills a seat, right?
Exactly.
A warm body they're able to put in the car. So I guess this means that Kovalainen is out.
Yeah, it looks like Kovalainen's out, and it looks like Petrov is probably out too.
Yeah. Well, doggone. I'm sorry to see Kovalainen go.
Maybe they'll go to the Camping World Truck Series.
Actually, I think
Kimmy tried that.
I'd like to see Kovalainen get into. You know, I'd like to see Kovalainen get into rally.
As Monster Supercross. You know, we were talking
not
about John.
It's a speeder sport, though, is it? Or Finnish?
Yeah, well, you and I were talking about John Surtees before we got started.
Oh, yes.
Maybe he can make a run at that and do the Monster Supercross and then Sprint Cup double.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I believe that's pretty much the end of the show there, gentlemen. We've ended it with a very beige colored note there.
More exciting things to do.
Exactly. Tell me about the Mazda swag, sir.
Well, last couple weeks we were running a contest trying to get people to sign up, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, and our Facebook winner is Laura Hagen Rudisiel.
Yay! So, congratulations!
For following us on Facebook, she wins the 2012 Speedway Directory, and there was much rejoicing.
Hey.
And James at IndyCar Rebirth. One of our Twitter followers wins the 2013 Mazda Speed Motorsports calendar. So we'll be getting in touch with them to get them their addresses so we can get their goodies sent out. And that means, of course, that it's time to give some more stuff away. And I'm going to pause here, and I'll be right back. I'm going to have to clip.
Let's see now. Bum, bum, bum. How you been, Mike?
I've been all right. It's just been a very long last week.
So that means this week we have something new to give away. We are going to give away a book by Neil Roberts, Think Fast, The Racer's Y2 Guide to Winning. So this is chock full of basically how to take care of your race machine, how to pass, how to take corners, all the whys and hows of going fast and staying in control. How to take care of your race car, how to push it to its ultimate limits, whether you're into club racing, formula racing, or just take your daily driver out to the autocross every once in a while. And so to win this, or iRacing, as some say. To win this, what you need to do is leave a comment on this week's show. So leave a comment there on the post for this week's show, and we will randomly select winner from the post or from the commenters. And to comment, I tell you what, we'll whether you comment directly on the site, whether you comment on our Facebook page, or whether you comment on the show on Twitter, any of the above will be fine. So that's it. Comment on our show, on our site, on our Facebook page, on our include us in a tweet, whatever. I think twit might have been better. That might describe us better.
You know, I kept trying to say Twitter the other day, but I kept saying tweeter.
Tweeter, yeah. Yeah, it works. But anyway, and we'll have the winner next week. By the way, next week you definitely want to listen to the show. We are giving away that coffee table book, Mazda's epic journey to the 24 hours of Le Mans. You're going to have to work hard to win that one. So
there's only one thing I have to say to that,
and listen for how to win,
and that is dibs.
Nope, no dibs. Sorry, those of you who help us out with the show, with the writing, with the photography. Unfortunately, you're not eligible.
Can I quit and then come back?
Come on, you guys fire us all the time.
You guys are new. Sean's been firing me for years.
Sean is not here right now, and since I don't have the authority to fire anyone, all I can simply do is put you on administrative leave.
Yeah, right. So, anyway, congratulations to Laura and James. We'll be getting in touch with you here pretty soon.
Wicked. Mike Shaw, anything you would like to add before we mercifully put the show down for the week?
Yeah, as we were finishing up the F1 stuff that we were talking about there, I hastily went and posted on the openpaddock.net webpage the YouTube video of the Colin McRae legend thing there. So
nice.
Go ahead and go to our website, and it's an hour-long show, but it's a great show to watch. And, yeah, give it a good watch there. Yep.
Wicked. Jay Douglas, you got anything?
Nope. Looking forward to 100 Acre Wood. Can't get here fast enough.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Wicked. And as for me, I am still trying to beat round one of the Champions Challenge on F1 2012, so good luck to me on that one. It is almost impossible to do. So I guess that's going to do it for this episode 174 of the Open Paddock Podcast. Please join us next week for episode number 175, where J. Douglas Patterson will dance topless on tables, and Mike Shaw will make it rain. So, everyone have a great week, and we'll see you.
Good night.